person here. So we're ready to get started, and this is the session on It Takes Two or More to Communicate.
Hi. Welcome. You may be wondering why a session on communication in a multicultural week. I think at the time I thought about this, it made more sense than it does to me now. But it does seem to me that if we are a people and if we are a part of a church that has a commitment to becoming more inclusive of a lot of folks culturally and in other kinds of ways, that it means that we need to also find ways to communicate with each other. For example, when a person of Hispanic background comes into a Lutheran church, I wonder what they must feel. If they have Roman Catholic background, there might be a lot of similarity with our Mass. We call it the service or the liturgy, built on the Roman Catholic Mass many years ago. Or if people from Asia come and experience life in a congregation, will they understand the Norwegian jokes that they hear at the coffee hour? Or should they? So that the communication, it seems to me, is a very basic issue when it comes to dealing with folks who may not be like us, or we may not be like them. So that there are cultural kinds of issues in communication as well as other things. So for this hour, the notion is that we can maybe share a little bit about our understanding of how we communicate. I have a little model to share that's been helpful to me that doesn't say everything about communication, but says some things about communication. And then that we practice it. And literally, we're going to need some volunteers in the last half of the session to take our newfound wisdom and experience and kind of act it out, and for us to kind of watch and see what happens in terms of how they communicate. To get started, I wonder, what do you know about communication? You know, we're so busy all of our life communicating. Have you ever thought about what makes for good communication? Anybody?
Good listening.
Yeah, listening. That's a good one to put up. Real important.
Speak a common language.
Sorry?
Speak a common language.
Yeah, the need for a common language.
You have to think about what you're going to say.
Is that a prerequisite?
Well, sometimes I have said things that I wish I hadn't thought about before.
Think before you speak.
Yeah. Yep.
Doesn't hurt, does it?
Yeah. It goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this common language, again, back to some of the ethnic stuff in the Lutheran Church. I'm not Scandinavian, and most of my adult life I've been out in the Pacific Southwest, and a lot of folks there from the Scandinavian tradition, very rich tradition. But I've been in groups where I really felt left out, and I've been in a Lutheran church all my life because there wasn't the common language there. And I've had to learn it, and to understand that only jokes are just, you know, your way of doing it, and that kind of thing. But when you start to become more inclusive, it's pretty important that there is a common language that's spoken, that we can hear each other. So, what else do you think about when you think about good communication?
I'd like to add here, you had that listening. Last year, our son got married, and in their vows, they said, to listen and to respond. Mm. I thought that was really neat.
Let's put that up there, because that's the other side, isn't it? To listen and to respond. Mm-hmm. And to respond in terms of what you've heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. What else is important to good communication?
Having something in common.
Okay.
That's very important.
You said common language, but I'm thinking of other things. Common grounds, I guess.
We'll just put other there. Yeah, some common ground. That helps, doesn't it? You can go out after you've been here at Holden and talk to someone who's been at Holden. And you can talk about what happens when you have that one meal where it's the food that you're revisiting that you've had the week before, and you get all the leftovers. What do they call it?
Week in review.
Week in review. That's a marvelous euphemism for leftovers. Yeah.
And but you remember that?
Huh? Yeah, I don't like leftovers. But you can do that, and somebody who's been at Holden will know what you're talking about. Or they'll know other things that are connected. So that common ground is important to communicate. If you don't have that to start with, sometimes you develop it. You know, when we came here, we spent a few minutes warming up a little bit. Where are you from? You know, getting acquainted with people just a little bit. Real important. What else do you think of?
Flexibility.
How do you mean that?
Not be so firm in your own views that you can't change or adapt.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you're working towards some kind of a decision together. Because we've got two people, one that says yes and one that says no. It's kind of hard to make decisions. Real hard. We just came from our living accommodations where four people, adults, were sitting on the front porch discussing their interest in taking a two-day hike at the end of this week. And it was real neat to watch them communicating. But they were very clear that their teenagers weren't going to be a part of that decision. You know? That was the point. They weren't going to be flexible because they knew they wouldn't go if they left it up to their teenagers to make that decision. But flexibility, yeah. What else do you think of?
The sharing of yourself and being open.
Ah, okay. Some openness is important. Sharing. Yeah. Sometimes communication kind of comes off like a negotiating session where you're playing poker. But your willingness to be vulnerable, even, to take a risk that someone will understand you. Some of you have been in some of my earlier sessions, and in several of those, I've done some readings out of a book. And I've dared to say to you, this is one of my Bibles. I said that in a church once and kind of got crucified for it. But I believe that God communicates with us in all kinds of ways, including the Bible. And that there are a lot of Bibles out there, if you will. But you got to risk saying that with another.
I think respect and not attack other people's opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not attack. I'll put that down. Real important. The model we'll look at in a few minutes is one that shows what happens when you don't follow that. And that there are points in a conversation, in a meeting, in a discussion, whatever it is, where you can move into that area and communication ceases. And some other things start working. Have you ever tried to make a decision in your local church on a hot subject? We'll try one of those tonight, just to see how we can do it. So it illustrates, you know, what can happen in a group. Other things, we're talking for those who just arrived. What are some of the things you know make for good communication? Anything else you'd list?
Making sure you understand what the other person's saying, like reflecting, you know.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, reflect.
No, I just did it to you.
Oh.
So, yeah. You know, so I asked you again to tell me what you mean.
Yeah.
Exactly. This whole matter of really seeking understanding. That's a long one. Okay.
To realize that many resist change, be sensitive to that common.
And watching out for the threats that might be in what you're talking about, that there is resistance.
So you don't lose the communication as well.
Yeah. So that's being sensitive to where others are.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sensitive to other positions, to what's happening in their life, to their experience. All of that goes into good communication. The amazing thing is that we can communicate at all. I really think that's a miracle. Who was the fellow who wrote a number of years ago, was it? you'll know the book title, The Miracle of Dialogue. Beautiful book title. What was it? Who was it? Yes, right.
Yeah, sometimes when you're talking and you're in discussion with somebody, well, after the conversation's over, you may have been found that where you were in the wrong. Yeah. And you have to accept criticism.
Yeah. That kind of an openness to receive criticism or admit it. And change. That symbol means change, you know. Mm-hmm. To even change.
How about questioning?
Questioning.
Opens up a conversation.
Yeah. Sure does. Real easy way. And in the model that we'll look at, it shows that there are several neat ways to open up communication that are very non-threatening. And there are some that are very threatening. You come on like gangbusters right away, and you lose people. You may have good ideas, but if you can't introduce them in a way that's non-threatening, there's a problem. Yeah.
Does eye contact enter into this?
Sure helps. Yeah, you wouldn't want to talk to me this way, would you?
Shows you're not interested.
Yeah.
But that's in this culture.
In this culture. Thank you, Sarah. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, my experience with Native American people is that is not necessarily a value. The value in looking away from a person really shows respect.
Asian cultures also.
Asian cultures, yes.
And there, and tonight we're not going to get into a lot of the cultural stuff, but that's a really good thing to flag, especially as you're working with people who are not necessarily a part of the dominant group of which you're a part, whoever that may be, in this country. Yeah, I mean, all kinds of shades in there. But the cultural differences are really important to understand. A lot of people, we were in Arizona for a number of years, and our agency there had a lot of contact with the Native American community. And you had to know that there was a different understanding of time operating. So the meeting call for 10 o'clock in the morning didn't mean it was going to start at 10 o'clock. It might start at 2:30. It started when it was ready to start. And if you went there and applied your white values on an Indian reservation, meeting with Indian people, you know, you would get very frustrated about it unless you understood simple things like that. Whole different set of values working.
How about showing an interest?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think we'll stop at that point and get on to the model so we have time at least to act it out one time. The model I want to share, and I think you're a good-sized group. I've got it on paper. I usually like to wait and pass this out later, but I think I'll pass this out now so you can walk through it with me. Have one. It's on pink to get your attention. If you take the circle, you see that at the top, and we'll cut it in quarters, and as you see it there, there are four quadrants to this model, and the top quadrant, as you see, is called developmental or developed. Okay? The quadrant over here is that quadrant that's called control. Over here, it's called relinquish. And at the bottom, it's called defend, or defensive. One of the things that's important as we look at this is to realize when you look at a model like this, you're kind of learning a new language, because we're going to be using words that you may not apply exactly the same way here, but we'll be putting them in the context of a model that we hope that a group like this would go out of here and they'd have kind of a new vocabulary even to use with each other. This is a kind of model that you can use if you're on a church council or a committee or a community planning group or wherever, and you can watch what's happening in that group and use this model to plot the kind of communication that's taking place. Now, like any model, it doesn't cover everything. And there are a lot of good models out there that can be used. But this is one that I found helpful and I thought would be helpful to share with you. In the developmental side, there are two basic notions there. One is the whole thing of informing, and the other is to explore or exploring. P-L. Informing. I come up to you and say, hey, I saw the report that you submitted last week and it was really helpful. Could we sit down and talk about it? That's very non-threatening. Yeah. It's saying, hey, giving some information. I saw it. I'd like to explore it with you. Yeah. Very non-threatening kind of opening to a meeting, to a if you're at work, dealing with a supervisor or with an employee that you supervise or whatever. Good communication often begins up here. And good communication often spends a lot of time up in this area, often until you're ready to reach a decision over whatever it is you're talking about. To inform, to explore is very non-threatening. It's a sharing of influence. It's a sharing of information. It's a sharing of power, if you will. We haven't said much about that, but whenever you're communicating from positions of power also. Whether it's in a marriage, or friends, or in a meeting, or whatever. There are all kinds of positions of power that are there. And if you can stay up in this kind of an area a lot of the time, a lot of good communication takes place. Now, as you think, and so influence up here, for example, is shared. Hey, you share with me what you've got to say about it, I share with you. It's a sharing kind of thing that we were talking about a moment ago. As you move down the controlling side of the model, you get into persuading and enforcing. So as you move down this side of the model, more influence is going down here. Rather, up here it's more shared. Here, the person who's over here is taking the influence, is exercising the power. So that you might start up here and say, hey, let's sit down and talk about it. But as you continue to talk, a person says, well, now, as you know in the report, I came out with this recommendation, and I really feel that this is a strong recommendation that meets the needs of this company. And therefore, I want to really put that on the table and say, let's look at it, and it's my recommendation that we adopt it. That's a persuasive argument. The person might go on to say, I spent 13 months studying this particular problem in the company. And we're at the point now we've got to do something about it, and this is my best judgment. That still keeps communication open. It's, it invites people to look at it. It says, hey, I feel strongly, but I want to talk about it. Now, if the person instead came down over here and said, now look, we can talk all we want in this meeting, but this is the way it's going to be. Then they've moved down into enforcing their opinion, their recommendation, and have really taken control of the process. If that person happens to be the boss, you've got a problem, don't you? How to bring the boss back up to this area where, hey, we know you have strong feelings about that, but could we back up a little bit and take a look at, is an attempt to bring the discussion back up here. Going too fast? Real simple stuff, I think, but it's helpful, I think, to put in some kind of a context. If you go down the other side, you have accommodation here and eventually you have comply. Accommodation. Well, gosh, boss, you have spent a lot of time on it, and I really have to to kind of honor your vast experience in this. I'm not sure I agree 100%, but I'm willing to go along with you. I'll accommodate to your views or to your recommendation. Comply is just pushing it down a little further, and it's giving up more of the influence. As you're down this side, you're giving up influence in the process. And so you get down here to compliance, and you say, well, boss said it, that's the way it is. I'm very close to checking out at that point, checking out of the process. I'm very close to saying the next thing, which might be, and if it goes wrong, we'll know who to blame. Now, I'm not going to take any responsibility. I'm going to push it over on this side where the person over here says, hey, this is the way it's got to be. You see how as you move down both sides, the deeper you get into the model, the less communication takes place. And finally, you come down here. And in this quadrant, basically, communication pretty well ceases. As you come down this side, if you can't enforce it, you fight about it. Hey, you take up the gloves at that point. Or if you're coming down this side in full compliance, you take flight from the whole situation. I don't have anything to do with it. Yeah. If it fails, it's your responsibility. I'm checking out on it.
Okay. It's still crunch time when you get down to there.
That's right. But when you're down in these two areas, you have basically cut off communication. It just isn't happening. That doesn't mean you have to stay here. And in a group, the conversation will be flipping all over the place here. It isn't that each person gets in a place and stands there. But you'll find yourself using a variety of techniques to seek to communicate, to seek to make connection. I don't know how you define communication. I like the definition that says communication is behavior that leads to the sharing of meaning. Or to put it very quickly, communication is the sharing of meaning. It's when you establish that you can understand each other. That doesn't mean agreement, but you really understand the other person. I understand you. I understand why you're recommending that. I don't agree with it, but we go with it because of whatever. Communication has taken place then. So it is the sharing of meaning. Without meaning, there's just no communication. And when you get down to this point, when you're seeing red or are running from the situation, you just lost it. Now the paper goes on to talk about four approaches to another person, and it's just another way of saying what we've been saying here. When you're in this quadrant, the controlling one, you're saying basically, I want to have most of the influence. I want to be in the position of power. After all, I am the supervisor. And I do have some authority in this company, and I get a larger paycheck than you do. And I've been given this by virtue of whatever, and so my opinions ought to count for something. I want to have the influence. Have you ever worked for someone like that? Have you ever been somebody like that? Won't ask you about that. In the relinquishing side, you're basically saying, I want to give you the influence. Now that can be a cop-out as you move around this side. But it's basically saying, hey, you know more than I do. Yeah, you take it from there. It's kind of the shrug of the shoulders is a good indicator. Somebody mentioned something about, I think you did, about eye contact and body language gets in there. That tells you a lot about what's going on in a group. Or if they start looking out the window instead of, you know, participating and looking around the table. So here, you're willing to give up influence, or another word for influence here is power. When you're up here, in the developmental area, you're saying, as it indicates here, I want to use my influence and yours. That sharing theme that several of you talked about. This is where, obviously, some of the most creative stuff takes place. In a sense, the most creative takes place in the upper part of the model. The more you're down in the lower area, the more difficult communication is, the more difficult decisions that everybody can live with, and so forth. So that's one way of looking at it. We mentioned earlier, as you move down this side, the whole matter of influence increases. And on this side, influence decreases. And the final point, it says, what's the concern in each of these quadrants? If you're in the developmental side, the concern is with the problem or the question before you. Let's explore this. Let's take a look at it. Let's see what are the possible options that we might use to make a decision in this area. Husband and wife, planning a vacation trip. One wants to go to South Dakota to see the family. The other wants to go to San Francisco and enjoy the nightlife. And, you know, the stuff that goes on there in terms of exploring and so forth. The question, as long as you can keep the question up there, hey, what's going to make for a good family vacation? Yeah. That may be your question. Or whatever the question, whatever the problem, if you can keep on that, you have a better chance of good communication, more effective communication, and ultimately good decisions. But, as so often happens when among us, one person finally backs down and says, okay, if you want to go see your parents, we'll go there this year. That doesn't make for a very happy vacation if you haven't worked it through that way.
Well, isn't it common to, during the course of a conversation, take a little bit from each side?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're trying to persuade somebody to do something, and they don't want to do it, well then you give up, you comply. You go, okay, fine. Is it very common?
Yeah, you see, it's kind of like, if I hear what you're saying accurately, I think so often we work for a win-lose approach. You know, I want to be the winner in this one. You know, my idea is the best one. And we don't always say it quite that way. The neat thing is if you can keep it up here and come out at kind of a win-win and something in it for everybody. Hey, let's go to South Dakota for a couple of days and let's take a weekend, leave the kids with the parents and go over to San Francisco. That's a good compromise. Real good compromise. And it's one that everybody enjoys. Yeah. In the control section, the concern is the problem as I see it, and the emphasis is on I. If you go down the relinquishing side, it's on the problem as others see it. That's not all bad. And we try to not put value judgments, although the more you go down here, the more difficult it is to communicate. And finally, in the defensive area, the real focus is on yourself. Your hurt feelings, hey, they don't appreciate me here. No one listens to me. Why do I stay here? You know, those kinds of poor me kinds of feelings that can happen. Yeah.
Is it kind of an American thing for the win-win approach, where there is no compromise? Or, I don't know, just in general?
Or, I don't know. I don't know if it's an American thing or not. I think the American thing is to win. You may disagree with that.
But in a win-win situation, you still like to be a contributor,
sure,
to the thought.
Best decisions are ones that everybody can feel good about. Really. The best decisions are, you may not go with all the way, but if you feel good about it, hey, I participated in that. That's what
one thing that's happened to me, at one time I was part of the power structure of a community. Now I'm retired and I'm nobody in the power structure of the community. So if I go before them and present an idea, it isn't as effective as if I go to like the superintendent of the school or attorney who's chairman of the board or maybe a doctor, you see, and then I present my idea and said, why don't you suggest that?
Mm-hmm.
It may not fly or not, but it's much more effective than I go.
Yeah.
And yet the idea is used.
That's a political decision on your part.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, politics is the art of the possible, getting something done. And if you don't have the influence in whatever group it is, but you can get to somebody who does, that's smart to do that. Yeah.
It's better than being left out in the cold.
Yeah. Other questions or reflections in this before we take a look at it and have a little fun? Make sense? Doesn't tell you a lot new, does it? I mean, it kind of for me, the first time I thought, oh yeah, I think I kind of knew that all along. But I find the model helpful, and it's kind of imprinted in my head. And don't always use it. I'm not always good at using it. Ask Sarah.
I'll never tell.
Yeah, good. It's interesting, a couple of weeks ago I had an employee at Lutheran Social Services in D.C. where I work, and it was time for her annual review, and the person who would normally do that was not around to do it, and so it was kind of kicked up to me to do. And a few days before that, I had had an administrative staff. There are about seven or eight of us who are administrative staff of the agency. And in the course of that meeting, this employee, who is a manager, a program director, got herself in a position where everybody else was agreeing to a direction to go on a particular issue except her. And she got to the point where everybody else was, the idea, the simple idea, we were going to have during the summer, once a month, a lunchtime picnic for the whole agency. Bring everybody together just for lunch. And we were exploring this idea and all, and she immediately went down and found out reasons it wouldn't work. And her folks in her department, they wouldn't come. They're too committed. They want to be out at lunchtime doing their work. And even though we said, well, you know, everybody ought to have a lunch hour and so forth. And she got down here and she tried to persuade the group, and they just weren't going to be persuaded. And then she got down here and almost, you know, banging her shoe on the table. And then we made the decision, and she did not go along with it. And she grew quiet for the rest of the meeting. She got down almost to here, and then she took flight. She checked out. Well, her evaluation was coming up. So I, it was a long one too, and it was a very productive one. I brought this out, and we had looked at this before periodically in our administrative staff. But I said, Barbara, let me tell you what I think was happening. And we charted this, and I kind of went through it as I went through it with you here. And we talked about it, and we kind of struggled with some of it, and she said, you know, I've always had this problem all my life. She said, people who know me know that I have very strong feelings. And she said, is there a place to have strong opinions? And I said, sure there is. But not strong opinions that lead you down into this area. Because then you cut yourself off from the group. And as it was, several of the other program directors after the meeting said, what with Barbara? This is the third time she's pulled that. You know. And the group was beginning to turn on her. Mm-hmm. So she said, next time we meet, I'd like to bring the subject up again and revisit it. I said, okay. So the next month, we meet for an afternoon each month. We came back, and the first item on the agenda was this. And so we put this on the board. And we talked about that last meeting. And Barbara brought it up, so it was her thing to bring up. We talked about how she functioned, how she moved further and further down this model. And people could say to her, yeah, we've noticed you function that way, and it really doesn't help, and I've got some real negative feelings about you because of this. And then one of them said, a very quiet person who likes to keep everything peaceful, said to Barbara, you know, I really feel like you haven't been a team player. Okay, so Ruth and Barbara had to talk a bit there. And it was a neat experience, even though it had pain attached to it. And I think we have to find ways in which we don't get down in this bottom area and ostracize ourselves from the group and get all other kinds of feelings going. So the next time you meet, it's they against Barbara, that kind of thing.
She was a good employee though, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She stuck to her guns.
She stuck to her guns.
Yeah.
And we respected that even though she was wrong. No, what I mean by that is that her employees came and they loved it. And she was wrong on that. They were not opposing this kind of thing. And it was in her head. And she's a very bright person. She expects a lot of people. She drives them hard. And she was projecting her own feelings about taking a lunch hour. And I happen to believe lunch hour is a very important time to take some time for yourself. And I try to do that myself. She's a very good employee in many, many ways. But on that one, she was digging a hole for herself. Other comments before we do a little role play? Okay. I think we have time probably for one role play. So if we have any people who want to be actors, this is your chance. Now I'm going to take one that has the potential for being... Are you leaving?
I know, I'm volunteering.
Oh, you better hear what you're volunteering for.
That's okay.
Oh, you just volunteer for everything.
Sure.
Well, wait until we get to it here, and you can be one of them. That's great to have such a volunteer spirit going here.
Well, I was just getting up off the floor, really.
Huh?
I was getting up off the floor, but I'll still volunteer.
Oh, okay. I have several here, but I think I want to use one that has the potential to be kind of controversial. And maybe in the process of doing the role play and analyzing it, because after the people do the role play for maybe 10 minutes or whatever, depending on how much they get into it, we'll then look at it and say, okay, what happened in the course of that? So you may want to jot some notes down. Hey, I saw this person doing this, but then they came down here, and then this person tried to pull everybody up. In other words, use this as a help to you to analyze the situation. I think what we're going to put together is a church council meeting. A church council meeting, okay? And these are the people I need. I need a person who's the chairperson of the church council. And let me just describe the person so that you can know if you can play this part. This person is cautious. He or she tries to run a fair meeting. He or she doesn't like a lot of controversy because the fear is always it's going to split the church. You know, the concern, and it can. Many things can split the church. This person is going to have to chair this meeting and deal with a rather ticklish, potentially divisive subject. So who would like to chair? Who feels like they're a good, even-handed person and can do this? I see someone pointing at someone else. Good friend, huh?
The only reason I'm doing that is because he's been trying to persuade his wife to volunteer.
He's not very persuasive, in other words. Would you be willing to do it?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Who wants to be the volunteer church council chairperson? Well, I guess we're over, folks. Let's go home. Come on. Okay. You'll be. What's your name?
Sarah.
Okay, good name. With an H or without an H?
With an H.
Good. That's the true way. The non-Norwegian way. Okay, Sarah will be the church council chair. Now, we need another person to serve as the treasurer of the congregation. This person, are any of you treasurers in your churches? Yeah. I'm going to draw a typical treasurer, but that doesn't mean all treasurers are this way. But this person is concerned about the income level. And this person, because of money, not because of anything else, doesn't want to see the church take on anything controversial because the money will go down. And then we can't pay the bills. And then, you know, all kinds of things will happen. So this person needs to be fairly cautious, but for economic, financial reasons. Who would like to be the treasurer of this group? This is a very modest group here.
I'll do it.
Okay, what's your name?
Nancy.
Nancy's going to be our treasurer. This is going to be an all-woman council, I have a feeling. Okay, we need a pastor. do you have any pastors here? Is your big chance to act like one. Who wants to be pastor? Notice I'm not saying anything about them. Let them be the pastor in their own terms here. Okay, your name?
Bill.
Bill. Bill will be the pastor. Now we need two more people and these need to be pretty vocal people. Okay.
My name's Pat.
Pat's going to be vocal. And I'm going to say that Pat, may I just assign you the vocal part I want? Is that okay with you?
I don't care.
You don't know the issue, and I don't want to tell you yet.
That's how it flex.
I want you basically, because I think you're a very flexible person, Pat.
Thank you.
To be the, we may find out different, but I'd like you to find to be the member of the church council who has strong feelings against the proposal.
Sounds good.
Okay. Now we need a member who is strong in favor of the proposal. Okay, and your name?
Deb.
Deb? Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Anybody here who's undecided all the time? Do we have an undecided person? Okay, your name?
Laura.
Laura will be undecided. Okay, this is going to be fun. No, we got more than that, don't we? We start at 6:15, go to 7:15.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, bring a chair, and this is your table. Sit on three sides, and get started. Sure.
Can you put this on table, chairs?
It is on table. We'll give you about 10 minutes to function in this role, and then we'll take the final 10 minutes and just talk about what you saw, how they functioned in light of this model. Okay? We'll turn this around.
Can I just make sure the treasurer does not want to get involved in this controversy?
The treasurer just wants to be sure that the church, that you don't make a decision that causes people to leave the church and take their money with them. Okay? Okay.
Good for you.
Sarah, are you ready?
Yes.
Let me tell you what the item is. You have been approached by the local Metropolitan Community Church that does not have a building to use your church sanctuary on Sunday afternoons for worship. And you need to talk tonight about what you want to do about that request. Does the Metropolitan Community Church communicate anything to you? Okay. Well, MCC is a denomination all across the country of gay and lesbian people.
Some people came up to me today, discuss with me today a proposal. The MCC Church, I'm sure you're all aware of their group in the city here, and they are really in desperate need of a place to worship in, and they cannot afford to rent a building, and they're wondering if they could use our place on Sunday afternoons. They wouldn't be in our way in terms of time because we don't have anything going on in the afternoons at all, and I'm just wondering, how does that sit with all of you? Could we discuss this a little bit?
Well, I just have one general question. You're saying that they can't afford to build a building, so therefore they would want to lease a building from us?
Well, they would.
And for a small rental fee or something?
Well, I don't know if they're financially able to pay anything at this point. I'm not really sure. We didn't get that far in the discussion. But just maybe would we be willing to let them use it? Or?
Are these gay people?
I think that's part of their, that's the affiliation there, gay and lesbian people that worship together, yes.
Okay.
Why does it have to be our church?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they've approached other people or other churches, but it just seems that I was just asked to bring it up.
Well, why not our church?
Have we ever done anything like this before?
No, but it's something to think about, I think, or to consider. Not that we would really want to really do it, maybe, but just thinking about it.
How long of a period of time would they be wanting to use our church for? Over a year or 6 months?
I don't know that much information. I'm not sure.
I guess I'm a little concerned. That's a real sensitive issue, and I wonder if some of our current parishioners would be upset by the fact that somebody, this group may be worshiping in our sanctuary. And that might be offensive, and they might leave the parish.
Well, are we calling ourselves Christians and we're closing our doors to a group that could use our building? when we don't need the building on Sunday afternoons, and I think that's part of our job as Christians, is to open the doors to anybody who needs to and wants to use the church.
We are Christians, but we do have the financial concerns as well, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, Deb, and I just think that's a really good point. However, I am a little concerned about, well, just the fact that I would assume they must take up some sort of collection or something. I would assume some sort of small fee would be possible. But then on a larger scale, I am a little more concerned about how the parishioners would feel about this or the congregation.
You mean in terms of using the electricity and the heat and in the wintertime? That can't cost that much.
If they're going to be using our
Sunday.
But if they're going to be using our church and they're going to be using our electricity, shouldn't they be obligated in some way to donate or put money towards the use? Like maybe they could take a free will offering or whatever for our usage. After all, our treasurer aren't the richest church in the world.
That's true. Well, if we
turn the heat off on Sunday afternoons when we go home?
Why should we have the heat on when there's nobody there? What good is that doing? That's wasting money.
I think that we should maybe get back to the issue. Yeah, let's assume we are going to get some kind of fee, or we're not going to get some kind of fee. How do we feel about just the basic having MCC use our church on Sunday? That's what we need to make a decision. And then we can work on the financial aspect.
Except that if we let these people use our church, what if some of our parishioners who are dead set against this issue find out about it? And what if our church becomes a split congregation?
That's the thing I'm supposed to do right
now. Well, I'm bringing it up as an issue.
I wonder if there's some sort of a way of kind of presenting it to the whole congregation in a way that would, you know, educate them to the need for this. But, you know, if we don't provide a place, well, certainly we want other people to worship. And
but why does it have to be the gays in our church?
They're our brothers and sisters in Christ. How can we close our door?
We as Christian people should realize that we are all God's creation. Some people may not be able to accept gay people as part of their church.
And there might be people like that in our church that cannot accept that.
But we are in the business of forgiving. Don't forget that. We're in the business of forgiving. People may not accept gays, but we must forgive them.
But they could be.
And they will always have, they may change somewhere down the line. We should give them that amount of love and respect, even though it's a pretty sensitive issue. And on the money, I think we should give them a grace period of maybe after eight meetings or 10 meetings. Let them more or less get the ball rolling, then we'll sit down and talk about money. But as Christians, we have to come together on this issue. We cannot stand to be biased.
But supposing
that is an evil that we do not need.
Supposing they persuade some of our people into being their lifestyle. How would you like it if your daughters and sons got involved in that lifestyle and you belonged to our church?
That's an interesting point.
I love it.
I'd like to break in at this point, so you have about 4 minutes. Can you see if you can reach a decision?
I like your idea about maybe we could somehow bring it up, have a meeting after church with coffee and some coffee cake or something, and we could just talk about the possibility and maybe have some people in the church that maybe are involved with MCC or the gay lesbian community talk with the parishioners, which would make it a less frightening thing, and then maybe we wouldn't have to, if we reached a decision together, maybe we wouldn't have to worry about money.
Well, the reason I mentioned it, and just to keep in mind, I think that's a good idea, to do that and get some more ideas about, you know, how the group congregation feels about it, but I think if we do have a small fee or something, it looks like we're reserving the building space for them to use, and we're not actually condoning or not condoning. So it's not like we're for or against, we're just leasing a building to a group of people who want to worship. and it's kind of an objective approach to, and yet we still have our parishioners and we still, you know.
How do you know we're going to still have our parishioners after they come in? How do we know that they're not going to persuade us? And how do we know that they're not going to split our congregation up?
Okay, now in our church, we have a lot of members with traditional values. Some people may not really, don't accept blacks, but they've never been around them and they feel uncomfortable. But through the mercy and love of Christ, they have learned to worship with and accept black people. Maybe the
black is a different thing. Black is not a gay person. Black is not necessarily gay.
It's a different person.
Gay.
A black person to the traditional Lutheran members of our church that are in their 80s and 90s, this may be.
And they may not understand this issue. Therefore, they shouldn't be allowed in our church.
They learn the love.
Well, I think we always have to get back to the mission of our church. Who are we called to be as God's children?
Not gays and lesbians.
Black people either, huh?
Black people are what?
Do you think there's a possibility that we could agree as a council to maybe have a representative group of their church come and meet with us and just, you know, kind of talk a little bit more of some of the issues before we make it an issue to the whole congregation? I'm a little nervous about, you know, even though I'm the one that suggested it seems like maybe if we do bring it up, it could get a little sticky. So I think maybe a
small quiet luncheon somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that's, that's a really good idea.
Slap some.
In the LBW, there's a section in the book that says, we have not loved our neighbors as ourselves.
But there's also a section in the Bible that says that in Sodom and Gomorrah's time, gay and lesbians were a sickness.
Are you a judge? There's only one judge.
Well,
are you a judge? You cannot judge people.
I'm going according to what the Word of God says.
Would you be willing to agree to meet some of their representatives?
With very, very much skepticism.
But you...
Well, then go join the Aryan...
Are you ousting me out of the church because of my views?
I'm giving you your own world view.
Would you two like to go outside? I'll stay right here. It's a shiny start.
Hey, Deb.
We have about 9 minutes before we're to break up. Okay, let's look at how this church council dealt with the issue of renting out their space to the Metropolitan Community Church in light of the model up here. What kind of roles did the folks play? Was Sarah a good person up in this area? Yeah, she was real strong. She kept pulling everybody up there and kept coming up with options. Options work well up here in the inform and explore quadrant. What about the pastor? Pastor Bill. Where was he in this? Yeah, he was persuading. He slipped into here.
Are you a judge?
We might say that a lot of preaching is in this area. When it might be helpful if sometimes our preachers would also help us to explore things and so forth, that it's not just pounding the pulpit that gets people to do whatever is desired. But he was a good pastor here, and he was trying to persuade his parishioner. He started kind of up in here, but he kind of slipped down here a little bit. Did a good job of it, Bill. What about our treasurer over here?
Nancy,
I'm sorry. How did she function?
Exploring.
Yeah, she was pretty open treasurer, I thought. As long as she got some money for the space, she wasn't bothered.
I wanted her to say that they are in a good financial position to pay. They're as intelligent as anyone. They are creative. They make money. They have no children. Why not assess them like you would any other group that comes in and uses your church on a Sunday afternoon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was more open than I thought she'd be. But she was asking good questions, and good questions fall up in this area.
Persuasively.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what about over here who was, let's see, Laura was the undecided church member over here. How did she function?
Great.
Yeah, you were a good consensus person.
Yeah, she listened for a long time, didn't she? Didn't say much. She was listening. Then when she came in with a comment, she pulled people right up here and said, you know, look, let's have a meeting. And then you suggested a quiet it's a closet someplace, no doubt. Have this meeting. But that was a very important role that she came up with something that was short of a congregational meeting or short of saying no, but kept the door open for communication. And so she really played a very important role, even though she said very little. And she was involved in the whole process. Okay, then we had over here Deb, and she was the person who basically was in favor right from the start. How did she, what areas did she function in? Yeah, she was up in here. She said, hey, we're Christian, aren't we? That's pretty informing, isn't it? Could we have gotten you to the point of being coming down stronger on anything, or I was wondering if we'd let it go on further. Would you and Pat
stronger have gotten, in favor of it.
Yeah. Would you and Pat have gotten into it at some
yeah,
point?
Yeah, I was going to bring out some statistics. And,
yeah.
Getting ready.
We shortchanged you a little bit.
I was going to go on the Word of God.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Pat. Well, we don't have time for all of that, but
was I vocal enough?
You did a great job. At the beginning, she was very useful. What did she do?
She posed a lot of questions.
Good questions, yeah. Have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? Now, that can also be a way to block. And that's the way she meant it. She wasn't quite as innocent as she wanted us to think.
But, she was open about her precious.
Yeah, right on the table. You didn't at all question where she was. But she began to move more down this controlling side of the quadrant. She began to try to persuade you, and you know, I don't know if you had voted on the meeting, how would you have voted?
Skeptical.
But would you have said, yes, I'll come to the lunch?
With skepticism.
Okay.
With much skepticism.
Yeah.
Earth-shaking.
Other comments? Yes?
I saw Bill kind of jump to the defensive. I saw him kind of jumping back and forth.
Yeah.
Tell us a little more about that.
Persuasion to, enforcing. And then I saw some body language, anyway, like that, at a point he was willing to say, forget it.
Yeah, well, that's coming down the relinquishing side. That's kind of checking out on the process.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he jumped back up to trying to persuade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a preacher. That's what he's supposed to The neat thing about this group is they never got into this. Now, if we let them go, they were kind of getting going there. We might have gotten them to fight and flight patterns. But they didn't do that. They at least kept it, for the most part, almost the whole time in this upper area. Again, where communication continues to happen. It's when you start moving down below that center line that communication can be cut off. And it can be counterproductive. Any other last comments? Well, you've been a marvelous group. It's been great fun. And keep communicating. Thank you.